welcome to another episode of the Nakata Presents podcast. Nakata Presents is the official podcast for Nakata, the global community for academic advising. My name is Matt Markin, and thank you so much for joining us for this episode. If you've been listening to prior episodes, then welcome back. We've been having great conversations on this particular series, but today's episode ends this series before we start a new one. It's bittersweet, but let's have another fantastic episode. Let me turn it over to the always amazing Gavin Farber from Temple University. Gavin, take it away.
Thank you, Matt. Welcome back to Presidential Perspectives, Reflections on the Past, Present, and Future of Nakata, where we take a look at the future of Nakata by honoring its past. My name is Gavin Farber, and I work at Temple University. I am here with Dana Hebriard from Aquinas College. Today, we are interviewing past Nakata presidents, Joanne Damager and J.P. Regalano. Joanne and JP, thank you for joining us today. To start things off, we would love each of you to introduce yourselves. Could you share your name, institution, and also like when you were president of Nakata? We'll first start with Joanne.
Well, hello to everyone. And Gavin and Dana, I want to thank you for inviting me and for helping us all to reflect on the past with a promising look to the future. This is fun. I am Joanne Damager, and I was president from 2013 to 2014. So currently, I am semi-retired. I like to joke that I am retired from full-time work. I'm very happy to be working for Wilmington University right now, which is in Delaware. I hold several part-time positions with Wilmington University. I am an adjunct assistant professor, teaching mostly in their doctoral program in higher education leadership. But I also teach a course or two for their master's in higher ed as well. And then I have an additional part-time position as the adjunct program coordinator for advanced programs in the College of Education. And with that job, I pretty much do anything that they need me to do to support those doctoral programs. So that's a little bit about me.
JP, we'd love to hear from you.
Thank you, Dana. Thank you, Gavin. Hello, Joanne. As Gavin stated, I'm John Paul J.P. Degalato, and I actually don't currently work at an institute of higher education, but I am not retired. I work in the corporate world, helping run some family businesses on my wife's side of the family. But I was vice president with Joanne and under Joanne's leadership as president. So my time as president came in 2014-2015. I'm really excited about being here, so I appreciate the invitation and the opportunity to talk about some Nakata history.
I have so many questions, JP. I wondered if you could take a moment to talk about that transition into the corporate world from higher ed and kind of share a little bit about kind of the things that translated and the things that you think, gosh, totally different.
Appreciate that opportunity. Thank you, Dana. So what I have learned, long story short, it wasn't necessarily my choice to leave higher education. Sort of things happened at the institution I was at. And then with a family of six, we decided to move closer to home here in Austin. And with that came an opportunity to overtake my father-in-law sort of family businesses. So between my wife and her siblings and my brother-in-laws, we've taken over. And so to answer your question specifically, what I have learned, the skills that have transferred are in some cases, basic skills, communication skills, written communication skills, how to work with folks, organizational skills, problem solving. I guess some new skills that I fine-tuned and have learned is being able to go into different fields. For example, we have an IT company, a construction company, a roofing company. Well, I have no direct expertise in, but I can learn just enough, you know, to being able to sort of navigate myself through the business. And I take that completely from my education, my experience in higher education. You know, I might have started off in advising, but my position worked really closely with enrollment, with registrar, with financial aid. And so being able to adapt just to different fields. But what didn't change was being able to work with people. being able to work with clients, being able to problem solve, being able to sort of forecast issues. All of that has really been, I would say, really helpful as far as transitioning my work, my into my new position, into the new work that I do.
All right, Joanne, you've been my mentor for quite some time, and I know I am not alone. Mentoring seems to be integral to your personality, and I've watched you unofficially mentor dozens, if not tens beyond professionals within Region 2 alone. Can you speak about what the mentor role means to you, and maybe what inspired you to mentor others?
Sure, Gavin. And I'm glad that I knew that you might be asking me this question, because honestly, I really stopped to think about what is my answer to all of that. And here's my answer. I have given and I have received so much through mentoring that it is almost unbelievable to me. And having the opportunity now to mentor individuals locally across the country. And then thanks to Gavin, I have a mentee in Australia now. So globally, mentoring is my way of giving back to a profession that has given so much to me. And in a minute, you're going to hear how mentoring provided me a way, and it still does, provides me a way to do for others what colleagues in the past have done for me. And that is to believe in someone. Mentoring gives me the opportunity to believe in others and to empower them and to encourage them to be all that they might want to be. So it's my way of assisting other professionals who all seem to love helping students as much as I love helping students. And Gavin, no one knows this better than you, that in all mentoring roles, mentoring is very reciprocal. It allows a person like myself, and Gavin is a wonderful mentor as well. I think that we all are, but it allows us to offer knowledge and encouragement to others. But in return, we receive so much from each mentee with whom we work. And last but not least, it's a lot of fun. So thank you, Gavin, for asking about that. And yes, I'll be around for a long time, Gavin, so you can't get rid of me.
I kind of want to ask JP this too, just because I met JP through you at our first ever mentoring panel in St. Louis in 2017. And it was through that panel that like I met JP right away. And it was like, here's my number. If you need anything, call me. We just started this friendship through there. So I want to hear the JP perspective.
Sure. Appreciate that. I believe strongly in paying it forward. I'm a first-generation college student. And for me, what that means is I'm the first in my entire family to go to college. And you're talking about a total of about 20 aunts and uncles combined and with a bunch of cousins. And so being that first to not only go to college and graduate, and thankfully I'm not the only one, was a significant deal for me, a defining moment in my life. But I couldn't have done it just by myself. So obviously with the support of my parents, but also with mentoring along the way, some of that from advising. I can't say that's what inspired me to go into advising, but I'm saying when I reflect back on my journey, advisors were a big part of that. When I became an advisor, I instantly benefited from knowing and getting mentored from folks on my campus and then later in Nakata. So I've just always believed in paying it forward, that we don't get to where we are by ourselves. And so we need to do our best to connect folks. And with something like Nakata, I believe strongly that it's not about us. It's about the organization. It's about the work that we do. And mentoring, whether it's formal mentoring, like the Emerging Leaders Program, or informal mentoring. I mean, I look at Gavin, at you and Dana, and I know we've interacted, but I look at you all as the current and the future of Nakata. And if Joanne and I don't do our part, not lecturing, but sharing, but also the giving back, then, you know, it really doesn't matter what we've done. And that's a big part of being, of providing mentoring, is being there for others and sharing and don't holding anything back. Talking about the good, the bad, and the ugly is important, because that's the only way that this organization like ours will grow.
And I love the fact that the two of you were paired together. Joanne, you're going to add something to that.
Yes, I just wanted to just do a shout out to Gavin, who not only has been a mentee, but a mentor, but he is doing marvelous, marvelous work at sharing the role and the value of mentoring through all the presentations that he has put together on mentoring. So Gavin, thank you, because, you know, a lot of professionals are afraid to reach out to other people and ask someone to be their mentor. And I think that's a good message that we might want to share today, that, you know, if there's someone that you admire, someone whose leadership you aspire to, you know, don't be afraid to, you know, just ask them, would you interact with me from time to time and be a mentor? So I think Gavin and a whole group of us who present on this pretty regularly are doing a really good job in encouraging others to be mentees, to seek mentors, and to step forward and be mentors too.
Agreed. Agreed. JP, you mentioned being a first generation college student. And I know that, you know, during your presidency, you often spoke of your student experience and kind of how that shaped your work and, you know, at work as an advisor, work at in Nakata. And I wonder what impact that had on your goals of the association during your time as the on the board of directors?
Sure. A big one. I always take the attitude, especially in my life in Nakata, that we cannot assume that everybody knows the ins and outs of Nakata. So the, even as our work with students, you know, at orientation or whenever we meet with a student, you know, we want to tell them all these things and go through the list. And then, you know, for that one shot, because we think we're not going to see them again. And then, you know, it just becomes too much. And we can't assume that students know everything about how to navigate the institution. So we can't assume that our members know about Nakata. I was fortunate that I became involved in Nakata. I went to my first, I became an advisor after I graduated in college. And I went to my first Nakata annual conference 2 years into my career. And pretty much I attended almost every single one of them till 2018. And I say that because I know that that was a luxury. I know that was a luxury. But in that luxury came the opportunity to really get to know the organization, to really get to know folks in the organization. And the two go hand in hand. It's really hard to, in my opinion, get the full experience of Nakata if you don't get to know the people in Nakata. And to me, that goes together. And so the way when I became a leader, formally and informally, was, okay, let's never forget that when we talk about Nakata, we have to be speaking to those folks that are new, because the majority of our members are not like the four of us. You know, they haven't been in Nakata for years. They didn't necessarily have a formal mentorship. They're folks that maybe were lucky to go to some Nakata event. And so, you know, and that was important for me to operate, that whatever we did, whatever discussion we did, whatever policies we made, whatever new things we wanted to create, that we kept in mind, yes, the veterans were important, they're always important, but that we had to keep in mind the newer members of Nakata. And it's because of my experience as a first generation college student that I didn't necessarily know how a college schedule worked, that I didn't necessarily know how academic advising was different from my counseling in high school, right? That I didn't exactly know, you know, how to speak to professors and teachers, because K through 12, they were always reaching out to me. So it's just sort of that experience that really defined my way as a professional in Nakata, but also as a professional in general.
Thank you both for just speaking so eloquently just about mentoring in general. I think Joanne hit it right on the head. There are people in our field, and in any field really, in any profession, that the students and or the new professionals are sometimes scared to just send an email of like, hey, I really admire you and I really want help. And it's sometimes difficult. And I had learned a really cool lesson from a supervisor I had during a summer internship at another institution. And he had said something really profound to me that as advisors and advising practitioners, really, that sometimes we're the last advisor that a student will meet with before they go into the real world. And they might not get that interaction again with a future supervisor. So the student comes to us because they feel confident in the trust that they're building between us. And I was 22 or 23. I was done my first year of grad school, and it was something profound going into my last year of grad school with. And I was happy that that little nugget of knowledge was shared with me, and I take it with me in the work I do now. So I really appreciate JP, you speaking on that so well. And it's just, it gives you chills when you hear it from so many other people that like, we're all on the same kind of wavelength, you know, so that's something really super, super impressive. So I'm going to go back to Dana, because I know Dana's got this really awesome question about your leadership pathways in the association, because that's something that we always want to know too. Like, how did it work? Like, how does that work?
Oh, yeah. Well, kind of on the whole mentoring trend, you don't know what you don't know, right? And sometimes individuals, just kind of like what you were saying, JP, unless you have someone who is there to guide you. I mean, I remember working, I'm from West Michigan, and Maura Reynolds, who also former, you know, NACADA, small college, university, person from Hope College, so here in West Michigan, was the one who said, there's this advising community I was the president of. You should get involved as another small college person, right? You need that one person to say, this is a path, a potential path for you. And so for both of you, and maybe we can start with you, Joanne, and then kind of go to JP, but I'd love for listeners to hear your leadership pathway through NACADA. Kind of where did it start, and what was your beginning origin story?
Sure, Dana. I think this will be fun. I'm going to start with the end in mind by saying what led me to the presidency is the same thing that led me to NACADA in the very beginning. And I think that our listeners are going to hear a little theme that none of us planned for, but I'm going to build on something JP said. What led me to the presidency and led me first to NACADA were the people around me, the people of NACADA who knew about it. So it was those people who believed in me, who poured their trust into me. They're the people that really helped me to see my potential and first got me involved in NACADA and then inspired me to run for the board and then for the presidency. So here's a little bit about my story. My first job in higher education was in a merged department of academic advising and career planning. And so my boss at the time, who then became a mentor, who now is a very dear friend, and who, by the way, is a past president of NACADA, Betsy Riggins, she encouraged me to attend my first annual NACADA conference in 1998. Now, when she suggested it to me, I was pretty happy about it because it was going to be in California that year. But I was also very apprehensive because I had never been to such a large conference. My segue into higher education was a second career for me, so this was all new. But I attended that conference in 1998, and she convinced me to present. So I was really like a deer in headlights, but it was amazing because she believed in what I could do before I ever realized what I could do. And that's what good bosses, good supervisors, good mentors do. So following that conference, I just had this sense that NACADA was a family. I mean, it's amazing, isn't it? The culture, the vibes that you get. I had never been with a group of people who were so willing to share and to chat. And then to be there for several days with people who loved what you love to do was just very invigorating. So I started to get involved, and I got involved in two ways. I got involved in the region, and I also got involved at the association level. So I think, Dana, I would say that my pathway to leadership was through two divisions, both through the regional division and through the administrative division. And so I'm going to take a little pause here in my story just to reiterate something that both you and John, JP have already said. We can't take for granted that people understand the organizational structure of NACADA and these different pathways. So as recently as last week, I was speaking with a mentor, and she's a young professional and she is a NACADA member, but I asked her if she knew about the different divisions and what the council was all about, and she didn't have a clue. So it was really fun to go through the NACADA website, where it is nicely mapped out for us. But I think that that's something that we can do for young professionals, as we're talking about today, just share that information with them. So back to my story, I got involved by assuming several positions over the years in the region and took part in the steering committee, got to meet with all of our regional leadership. And just a plug for Region 2, you know, we have a lot of presidents coming out of Region 2 and a lot of great leadership positions throughout the association. And at some point, I was asked to chair the finance committee. And I also served as the chair for what was then association-wide. We had a member career services committee. And so I chaired that. And through that work, I began to think about a position on the board. But it was really someone who asked me if I would consider running for the board that started the thought in my own mind. And so once again, that goes back to, you know, Dana and Gavin, what you're saying, we've got to help plant those seeds in other people. So I thought about it, and then soon enough, I knew it was the right step. And I got on the board in that very first year. Gavin has probably heard me tell this story before. Somebody asked me if I would run for president. And I said to them, well, you know, I'll think about it, but not quite yet. I'm just getting my feet wet. And they helped me to realize something that I didn't realize when I first got on the board. That if you really aspire to be the NACADA president, you really want to strategize how you're going to spend your 3 years on the board. Because what they helped me to realize in that moment was that if I didn't, they helped me to think about, before being president, it really is a good idea to be vice president, right, JP? I mean, we get a lot from that vice presidency. So they helped me to strategize that I really had to start preparing my program, my platform for the vice presidency, so that then in the third year on the board, I could run for president. Because if not, quite frankly, you run out of time. So, you know, I try to spread that to all young professionals, that if you're aspiring to be the president, really think about what you're going to do in your first year to get you ready for the vice presidency and then running for the presidency. And so by someone pouring themselves into me, I was inspired. I did run for vice president and had a wonderful year with Joshua Smith as my president, and then ran for the presidency. So that's my story. Thank you for asking.
Thank you, Joanne. Oh, man, I love to hear those stories. So I really appreciate these questions. So what's very interesting, because I don't think Joanne and I knew until later, when we started doing things like webinars or whatever, that we realized we attended our first NACADA annual conference was in 98. It was also Dana Zahorek's first 98. So there might have been something about that conference in San Diego that year. But my story is slightly different in that, well, I guess not slightly, it is different, in that advising was sort of always my initial first career, in that as an undergrad, I started off as an orientation peer advisor, orientation advisor, which led to me becoming a peer advisor in one of the colleges, which as a first-generation college graduate, not knowing how to prepare for life after graduation, I was offered, you know, a position in that dean's office, and I took it. And so I need to give shout outs to two of my mentors at the UT campus at the time, University of Texas Austin, and that's Joanne Huber and Elizabeth Hastings, because both of them pushed all of us, but pushed me to be involved on our campus and then later on in NACADA. The on-campus involvement was important because at UT Austin, we were a large institution with several hundred advisors, but we were a decentralized advising institution, right? And so it was our network of advisors that really was able to sort of share information and get things done. And so I immediately got involved on my campus level. And when I did attend my first annual conference, because I knew folks like Joanne and Liz, I met folks like Charlie, I met folks like Virginia Gordon, George Steele, legends in NACADA, right? I'm with a legend today, Joanne Damager, right? So I got a chance really early on to connect with people who were involved in NACADA, who knew about NACADA. But it took me several years to get involved in NACADA, besides attending events. And so the first committee that I joined or I was on was on what was then called the Diversity Committee. Now I know it's, well, you can tell me what it is. I think Equity, Inclusion, Diversity Committee, if I have that right, or EDI. But the point is like that, I joined that committee. I'm going to share this really quick story about how even someone who became president, by the way, I had no business serving as president in NACADA, I'll come back to that later, but who even made a mistake as a leader. And what I will admit to right now is that Charlie Nutt had put me on the annual conference advisor committee. Not really too sure why, that's part of the perks of knowing folks in the executive office. And I had no idea what being on a committee meant at the time. And so I went to the annual conference and I'm doing my thing, conferencing. And then Charlie calls me and said, hey, bud, did you miss something this morning? And I was like, what are you talking about, Charlie? He's like, the meeting. You missed the meeting. And I was like, oh, my gosh, Charlie, I totally missed that. It was so dumb, right? When you think about it, you're like, wait a minute. Like, I never realized what being on the NACADA committee meant. You know, it never occurred to me to ask those questions. And it goes back to what I said earlier. I never want to assume, which is why when we talked as leaders, how the transition process from elected and appointed outgoing and incoming leaders was so important. Because how is someone like Gavin and Dana or JP or Joanne, how are we supposed to know what's expected of us? And fortunately, NACADA has gotten a lot better with manuals and more formal orientations and all that. So it's fantastic. But I share that story because this was me early in my NACADA career that I could have been like, oh, my God, I totally screwed up. You know, I'm embarrassed. I'm never going to show my face again, you know, because you didn't want to be that person. But I also started with the administrative committee. I became heavily involved on the region level. I somehow got convinced to run for conference co-chair for NACADA Region 7. So a plug for Region 7. We have our own fair share of presidents from that region. And so that led to me serving on the region steering committee, which led to running and getting the Region 7 chair, which then led for me to serving on the NACADA council. And then I ran for board and I didn't get it the first time I ran. So at that time I was like, you know what? I mean, my time on council was great, but there's only 9 folks that serve on the board, and maybe it just wasn't meant to be. But to be honest, I had the courage to run again. And I don't say courage to flatter me. I say courage because it takes courage to run for these positions. And so for anyone and everyone out there who's ever thought about running for a position, who's ever run for a position and didn't get it, I thank you for that courage. And I encourage you to have the courage to run again and to keep running, to keep going. So fortunately, I ran again for council, I mean for board, and I got it. And like Joanne said, because I had all these contacts, because I had all this previous experience as a Nakata leader in quotes, I knew that there was a small window, and that immediately in your first year, going into your second year, you know, if you want to run for VP or president and you want to go that VP president route, you needed to run for VP. And so I ran, I got it, got the fortunate luxury to serve under Joanne, and then ran for president. And that's how it happened. And I say because I had no business, because if you would have told me, you know, back in the day that I would be the elected leader of an organization like Nakata, I would have said, no way. Number one, I didn't think I had what it took, to be honest. I certainly didn't have the confidence. It was the same way when I was a first generation college student, and I thought I was going to fail out that first semester because I didn't know any better. And so it's sort of that, it's interesting, the positive experience of being a first generation, but also that baggage that you bring with you of, you know, do you these self-doubts, you know, are you faking it, you know, everybody in the room. And what's also important for me to highlight here, it wasn't just the elected leaders of Nakata. It was the leaders of Nakata that weren't necessarily in formal positions. That's important to talk about here. You know, the researchers, the writers, the folks that you know that you can count on that have no desire to run for a formal position, right? All of that sort of really helped my leadership journey in Nakata.
Yeah, that imposter syndrome that we all kind of talk about, and you really clarify it so well in what you were saying. And I had to chuckle because you have the Charlie Nutt accent down pat. So thank you for that, too. That was great. That was a great story. Oh, gosh. Hey, Gavin, do you have the next question?
I do. And it's actually for both JP and Joanne. So we would like to know, is there anything you wish you had known prior to taking on the role of Nakata president? Let's start with JP.
This is also always an excellent question. I was fortunate. I'm really close friends with Joanne Huber, who had served as Nakata president. And because those ex-presidents still like to hang around each other, I learned a lot just from listening to them. But as I said before, it was also important to listen to folks who didn't serve on the council, on the board, but also were well-respected leaders in Nakata about their experiences. And so I honestly felt pretty prepared. But just you still had to get your head wrapped around the short time frame you have in those positions of VP and president, and knowing that in VP, you know, you needed to support your president. You know, it was her agenda that was driving the bus, and you needed to support that. And as president, that you got to drive the bus. But it was a small window. And as much as leaders, I think the biggest mistake or the biggest thing I caution folks in leadership positions in Nakata, I was just talking about this with one of my mentees the other day, is don't think you can't do anything, but don't try to think you can do too much, right? And it's just that balance. And that was the same way as president. You know, what were these two or three things that I wanted our association, our board, our council, our leadership to focus on? The other thing that I have to admit, and I don't know how this is going to come across in this podcast, but I was shocked at the celebrityness of being a president. And I know that sounds weird, but I'm saying, like, the fact that people listened to what I had to say, folks that I had never met, folks that were leaders at their institutions. When I went to Melbourne, Australia, and was speaking there, and the fact that they all thought I had something important to say, the fact that, and this is the weird part, people were asking for my autograph, people were asking for selfies with me. Like, I kept telling people, I was like, I'm just JP. Like I'm just JP. Like, I'm not sure what all that was about, it was awesome. I don't want to deny that, but just that, honestly, I wasn't prepared for that. Nobody had ever prepared me for that. I still hold folks in high esteem in Nakata, you know, folks like Virginia Gordon. That the first time I met her, I literally bowed down before her, and she was like, "What are you doing?" You know, but I was like, "No, you don't understand. Like, you are advising, right?" I mean, but the fact that I got treated with a little bit of that was just crazy. So I know it might not be something you expected to hear, but it's my truth. So
Gavin, would you like me to pick up there with what I quickly learned in my role? And I actually learned this as vice president, not president. But we started work, Joshua Smith and myself. And just as JP said, you know, as vice president, you're there to support the president. We had some initiatives we were working on, and there were some deadlines, you know, things that were due. And certain groups of people didn't hand in their report or what was due or what they were supposed to do. And so immediately, you know, I'm talking to Charlie Nutt, and I'm like so frustrated. Charlie, what are we going to do? You know, should we reach out to them? And he said, Joanne, calm down. He said, what you have to realize is that we are entirely a volunteer association, and that unlike our professional work that, you know, we do every day, everyone is working on the side on their Nakata work. And so I learned very early on not to set the expectations unrealistically, that people sometimes were going to miss deadlines, that we just needed to keep encouraging them and be patient. And I think that that was an excellent lesson for me to learn as far as being vice president and president of an entirely volunteer association. Also, even though JP and I didn't rehearse this, I very much thought that my answer to this question should focus on time. I didn't realize how quickly that year would go as president. So the same thing that JP said, I found myself being handed the gavel and put together, you know, you get to speak for a little bit just at that opening session. And then the next thing you knew, we were all communicating by email with only probably one face-to-face meeting. And things were very fast-paced, you know, trying to get done the initiatives that you had set forward. And then before you know it, it's time for you to pass the gavel at the next annual conference, and you're passing it on to someone else. So the time goes quickly. As JP said, you have to really zero in on what you think the association needs, who you can partner with to accomplish that, and then just make as many inroads as you can with all the people who are working so hard in their other lives in addition to their Nakata lives. And then my one last top tip to anyone who's thinking about being prepared and not learning it on the spot is that the more that young professionals can experience all the different levels of Nakata leadership, moving through the state positions into the regional positions, or the advising community positions into the chair positions, and then up through the council, so that not only are you trying to lead all of those things, but you have lived and experienced all those things along the way. So, and one last thing, which doesn't have anything to do with your question, Gavin, but I do want to say to JP, JP, I don't think I've ever been called a legend, so I just want to say thank you. But I think that surviving as a Nakata leader and staying involved, as so many of us have done, and being encouraged to stay involved, maybe makes a lot of us legends unto ourselves. So thank you, JP, for the shout out.
Well, and I think that's such a testament to Nakata itself, is that so many individuals stay on in different roles, whether it's mentoring or different organizational committees, and a lot of it is the fact that we're all willing to be leaders and followers at times, right? And that is what makes the success of a volunteer organization. It's like, you know, equally serving as the person who passes out papers as much as the person who is the president. So to your point, JP, it does seem kind of an interesting position to be in when someone wants your selfie and you're like, I'm not Madonna. I don't know why you need my picture, but okay. So I wanted to ask a little bit about challenges. So I know we've talked about opportunities, but what are some of the biggest challenges within the association or the advising profession when you were the president? I think you spoke a lot to the challenges in the role of presidency. And my takeaway from both of you is pick two or three things that you want to accomplish, which I think is actually a good life lesson in general. But maybe Joanne, you could start during your, you know, 2013, 2014 year, what was going on in the profession of advising that affected your leadership?
Sure, Dana. And I think I'd like to focus on two separate things, if I may. The first is, and this is going to sound strange, it's something that we're still all very focused on and we need to be, and that is the issues of diversity, equity, inclusion, and justice. And so, you know, at that time, what we were trying to accomplish was we were trying to create an association where all members could see themselves in the membership and could see themselves in the leadership as well. But that is a very large task. And so, you know, that's why NACADA continues to work very, very hard at that. And that, you know, I believe we've just restructured the task force on inclusion and diversity. And so we're moving forward in new ways. And, you know, it's going on 10 years now, but we need to keep up that work. And so that was a challenge then. And I think it is a focus that we need to continue with. The other thing that we were very focused on at the time is that we wanted to be sure that NACADA members had ways to develop professionally through the association. And so what I mean by that is that I think we continue to work very hard once a person steps up into a leadership role in NACADA. And we onboard them and we have ways that they can develop, and we have our, you know, our meeting several times a year. But what about the other members? How do we support other members in their leadership, maybe in addition to what they can do in their own institutions or in their own lives? But how can NACADA help them? And so, to be honest with you, that was the impetus behind the Sustainable Leadership Committee. That really was to nurture people who maybe weren't in leadership roles yet, but encourage them to aspire to leadership roles. And so we were very focused on that, and we were able to put together that committee. And you'll see that when, if we have a question about what we felt we accomplished, I thought that that was a great accomplishment. I have learned that since then, the focus of that committee has sort of shifted a little bit, but it's you know, great work that they're doing and that we need to continue doing for all members. So there were our two challenges at the time.
I felt the challenge in my NACADA career, even to this day, with the exception of something, a significant global issue like COVID-19 or, you know, things of that nature, the issues continue to be the same. So diversity, equity issues, how to keep our membership involved and engaged and providing realistic pathways for them to get involved, right? Is an issue that continues to be an issue. How to provide cost-effective programming resources for our institutions, for our members, for our leaders on their campuses. How to continue to grow globally, because I think for a long time before NACADA expanded globally, you know, everything was looked at through either American or North American sort of lens, right? And what we found out quickly is that our colleagues, while they might have called advising something different in another country, we were all going through the same challenges. And part of that challenge is still the role and the status of academic advising on our college campuses, right? You still find some campuses and institutions where advising is seen, you know, as registration. And again, there's nothing wrong with advising being a part of registration, but it is not defined by registration, right? To where in other campuses, you have leadership pathways, you have career pathways for advisors, as opposed to being at a campus where in order for an advisor to rise up the ranks, they have to leave their office and they have to leave their campus and go somewhere else. Or they have to leave the profession of advising to go somewhere else, right? Or the fact that faculty who have advising as part of their portfolio, advising is viewed as not very important by the folks that evaluate them, right? That is part of the tenure process. That advising in many campuses is still seen as a numbers game, right? How many students do you see as opposed to, so it's about the quantity as opposed to the quality of advising that's happening. All of those, I think, were challenges for us in advising as a whole, right? But I think, and I know I'm not in the trenches right now, but I think those are still the challenges in advising, right? And what can we do? How do we leverage not only the size of our organization, but how do we leverage the resources in NACADA? And for me, that came in my year. How do we elevate? How do we the creation of the research center? Because we had plenty of practitioners, and we still do in our association, and that's important. But we also needed to start producing the research. We also need to start producing the writing so that we could sort of address all of those issues. And again, I think those continue to be the issues that we have in NACADA.
I think you both left us with a lot to think about. And so as we kind of near the end, I'd love to close this by just saying, JP and Joanne, thank you so much for being a part of this podcast and for sharing your experiences. As we mentioned, this concludes our podcast series, Presidential Perspectives, Reflections on the Past, Present, and Future of NACADA. If you have any questions or if you want to hear more of these episodes in the future, we'd love to hear your feedback. I can be reached at Aquinas College, DMH005@aquinas.edu, and Gavin can be reached at gavin.farber, F-A-R-B-E-R, @temple.edu. We hope that you enjoy these interviews as much as we have. Now we'd like to turn it over to Matt for the final word.
All right. And what a way to end the series, Joanne and JP. I really loved hearing your stories. And JP, you talked about being first gen and wanting to give back. And I can definitely connect with you on that. And Joanne, hearing about your story about putting your name in the hat and being NACADA president and having mentors have you realize what to plan for and how to strategize. It was just great advice that you got overall. And you both had so much knowledge and gave so many little tidbits for listeners to gain from. So thank you so much for that. And yes, just like Dana said, that does it for this episode and this series. So I hope you subscribe to this podcast and also bookmark the podcast page on the NACADA website. Dana and Gavin and Karen, let's do a series too, okay? So this might end this series, but we have another one starting real soon. So take care and keep advising.